previous installment, you will recall how the Mordechai traveled to the city of Dubrovna, where he thought he may be able to find his old friend, Reb Chaim. And happening upon the city, he went to the Kavronim Shul, the gravedigger's shul, where he saw somebody called Reb Chaim Porush, who he thought possibly was his friend, but on the other hand, he looked so strange to him, and he didn't yet get a glimpse of his face, that he thought possibly this is not his friend. And as he's looking at the Porush, and he's thinking to himself, what shtusim, what thoughts are possibly going through the Porush's mind, that Mordechai reminds himself about the time before he became a chosid and how he would conduct himself. Al pi kabbalah, and he thought he was the greatest individual, the Gaon Hador and the Tzadik Hador, but more than that, also the Onuv Hador, the master of humility of that generation. And how it happened on one Shabbos, Parshas Baloiska, he had received an aliyah where it says that Vayish Moshe Onuv Meid Mekolod Mashal Adama, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble individual, and he thought to himself that Ish Moshe is referring to him because his humility was even greater than Moshe Rabbeinu's, in the sense that Moshe Rabbeinu, we knew about how great and honored, how great and humble individual he was. While Reb Mordechai, while he was such a great tzaddik and mekubal, he concealed it from everyone, even from his own wife. And surely his humility was even greater than Moshe Rabbeinu's. But there was only one thing which was bothering him, and that was that the pasuk concluded, "Mikol Adam Ashal Pnei Adam," more than any other person upon the face of the earth. After all, Kodesh Baruch Hu must have known that many generations later there would be a Reb Mordechai the painter, who would be a great scholar in both Nigla and Chassidus, in Kabbalah, but he would also be so great a master of humility that he would keep this secret of his godliness, of his greatness, even from his wife. And by doing so, he truly fulfilled the mitzvah of anova, of being humble. So how could Kodesh Baruch Hu utter the phrase, more than any other person upon the face of the earth? But after careful thought and careful reflection, he came upon a solution that might farenfer, that might excuse Kodesh Baruch Hu. And this is what he thought to himself. Kodesh Baruch Hu was indeed aware that many generations later there would live a great Torah scholar and tzaddik who would be a far greater master of humility than Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Holy One, blessed be He, grants a person free will, so the person may choose for himself what path he would follow. It was true that Reb Mordechai had chosen for himself the right path, thank God. But it was also possible that he could have ended up just as great a scholar and tzaddik as he now was, without being such a master of humility. He might have ended up like one of those individuals who thinks highly of themselves out of respect for the Torah, such as the old Rav Rabbeinu Shmeir, who maintained that Kovod HaTorah, honoring the Torah and Torah scholars, is the greatest mitzvah that is possible. Now, here Reb Mordechai could have been just like that. And since it remained questionable which choice Reb Mordechai was going to make, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu avoided putting himself on the spot, as it were, by saying more than any person on the face of the earth. That means at that time, Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble. But later on, there may well come an individual who would far surpass Moshe Rabbeinu in the quality of anova. Still, the issue had continued to disturb him, and he considered his solution inadequate to release Kodesh Baruch Hu from this kasha, from this difficulty. The fact still remained that Kodesh Baruch Hu knew full well that someday there was going to be such an impressively great master of humility as Reb Mordechai. So how could he say in his holy Torah more than any other person upon the face of the earth? After Mordechai woke from his nap that Shabbos afternoon and drank shikaria, he drank some hot shikari coffee, he thought of an answer that might exonerate Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Holy One had said more than any person upon the face of the earth. These words were chosen very carefully, for presumably what God meant to say was the man called Moshe was exceedingly humble, more than any other person. For what reason did he add the extra words upon the face of the earth? But on careful reflection, we see that Kodesh Baruch Hu's words were carefully chosen. It was not sufficient for the Holy One to simply say, "V'ish Moshe onav miyurid mikol adam," that the man called Moshe was exceedingly humble, more than any other individual. For Kodesh Baruch Hu knew full well that many generations later there would be a great Torah scholar and tzaddik whose humility would surpass even that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Indeed, Moshe was a great master of humility, greater than all the other humble people upon the face of the earth. But this held true only if we limit our consideration to those humble people whose greatness and humility are universally known. But there's yet another class of master of humility, those who deliberately conceal their greatness and Torah and tzidkus and piety in order to fulfill the mitzvah of being humble. The Holy One was not at all referring to this sort of master of humility when he said more than any other person. For this sort of master of humility was indeed a greater master of humility than Moshe Rabbeinu. And with this, Rav Mordechai satisfactorily concluded to himself how there is no question on Kodesh Baruch Hu and how Moses was a master of humility, but he, Rav Mordechai, was an even greater master of humility. In fact, by far outclassed him because he was of a different type of humility. And Rav Mordechai was very, very proud of this novel interpretation and solution of seeing to it that God not end up in hot water over the pasuk and the Torah where seemingly he may have slighted Rav Mordechai in Rav Mordechai's humility. And even now, the Mordechai felt shame whenever he recalled all his idiotic and outrageous notions of long ago. From the depth of his heart, he praised Hashem, he praised God for the privilege of having seen the Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov, and having elevated himself to the true path of Avodas Hashem. And so it was that with eyes full of pity, he now observed the Porush davening mincha and reciting the confessional prayer of Al Chet with bitter tears. And Rav Mordechai thought to himself, who knows what crazy things the Porush is weeping about, or what foolish ideas are going through his mind. And this Rav Mordechai continued to think as he observed the Porush davening and going on his way into the Beis HaMedrash proper from the side room where the Porush was engaged in his long mincha prayer. In the Beis HaMedrash itself, the Mordechai began speaking with several Jews, telling them that he had been in the Volin Podolia Guberna, in the neighborhood of Volin Podolia, where there lived a great goyin and tzaddik, a great Torah scholar and righteous individual and miracle worker, whose fame had spread throughout the region. To this, one of the listeners responded, and what about our own Reb Chaim Porush? Is he only a small tzaddik? For more than 10 years now, he sits only in the Kavronim Shul, where he fasts and studies day and night, speaking not a word to anyone. Whenever he goes outdoors to the restroom or to the bathhouse, he walks blindfolded to avoid seeing anything around him. He even refuses to eat green peas, nor does a bit of cabbage which may have worms ever enter his holy mouth. Hearing this, Mordechai began to inquire further, where did the Parash come from? Was he a native of Rassens, or was that merely his former home prior to his arrival here? None of those present could answer any of Mordechai's questions. Just then, one of the gravediggers hurried over, bringing a low, thick block of wood with the heads of several thick nails protruding. In a loud voice, the gravedigger announced, "And here is the wooden block upon which the Holy Parash sits while reciting the Tikkun Chatzos, the midnight lamentation prayers about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Holy Temples, each night after midnight." Another one of the Jews from the Beis HaMikdash piped in, "From the Shiva Oseh B'Tammuz, from the 17th of Tammuz, until after Tisha B'Av, until after the 9th of Av, and from Rosh Chodesh Elul, until after Yom Kippur, he, Reb Chaim, never goes out of the Beis HaMikdash, except, God forbid, for a funeral. He's very, very careful about the mitzvah of Halvoyas Emes, about participating in a funeral procession." Meanwhile, the Mordechai noticed someone walking out of the side room, leading another by the hand. "Who is that blind Jew?" he asked. "Why, that is the Parash," they replied. "He enters the public prayer room only while blindfolded. In the street, he walks with his eyes shut even at night, and in daytime, he is always blindfolded." The Mordechai decided to remain there overnight in order to observe the Parash's behavior, and so he took a Gemara and sat down to study. The assembled had long gone home when the Parash lay down to sleep on the floor with all his clothes on, while Mordechai continued studying all night. It was soon after Chatzos, soon after midnight, that the Parash awoke. And as he awoke, he took the block with the nails, put it down near the doorpost between the side room and the Beis HaMikdash proper, and began reciting Tikkun Chatzos in a very, very sad and mournful tone. Reb Mordechai also recited Tikkun Chatzos, along with several other Jews who had assembled for that purpose. When they finished the recitation of Tikkun Chatzos, it was already broad daylight, for it was at the beginning of Tammuz, and in that portion of Poland, Russia, the sun rose very, very early. Members of the Chevra Tehillim, those who would recite Tehillim, the entire book of Psalms every day, began to assemble, and these were Jews who would gather each morning in the Beis HaMikdash at 3 o'clock in the morning to recite Tehillim. Most of these Jews were tradesmen, tailors, cobblers, butchers, Balei Agola, coachmen, and other village workmen. When a few minyonim, when a few quorums of these Jews had assembled, one of the Chevra Tehillim members, one of the people who belonged to that group, began reciting the first verse of Tehillim, "Asher Yaish, fortunate is the man who does not follow the counsel of the wicked." The others immediately began following along, and they said their Tehillim with such delight and devotion that Reb Mordechai envied their staunch innocence and sincerity. The facial expressions of each of the Tehillim zogers, of each of the Tehillim sayers, reflected an innocent charm and an inner devotion to what they were reciting. From time to time, the tone of the people reciting Tehillim would change. Now they were prayerful, now hopeful, now their voices were broken. One could tell by their faces that they were aware of and understood what they were saying. Reb Mordechai was quite moved by these Tehillim Zogers, by these Tehillim soothsayers, and yet there was one thing that he simply could not tolerate, and that was their frigid and lifeless manner of these people. Their frigid and lifeless movements and sounds made a gloomy impression upon Rav Mordechai. But then Rav Mordechai thought to himself, what about me? What am I? For he had once imagined himself to be the Holy One's confederate, and expected that any day now that the prophet, that Eliyahu Hanavi, that the prophet Eliyahu, Elijah, would reveal himself to him. The only difference between he and them was that God, blessed be He, had taken pity upon him and caused events to transpire and evolve in such a fashion that he ended up in a faraway land where he was privileged to meet the Baal Shem Tov. And within the 2 years' time that he was at the Baal Shem Tov, he had managed to rid himself of the coarse impurities in his character. And he thought to himself that these frigid, lifeless, stiff Jews, along with their emaciated parish, could also be saved by the holy Baal Shem Tov. The Rebbe, with his path of divine service, was truly Mechayim Mesim. He actually resurrected the dead, and he turned cold into warm, frigid into heated, and brought the dead to life spiritually. Compare, for example, these Jews with those simple Jews whom Reb Mordechai had seen in the village of Zaslav when he had first heard of the Baal Shem Tov's name. He remembered the faces of those Jews. Those Tehillim sayers were also cobblers, tailors, coachmen, and butchers. But those Jews were alive, happy, reciting Tehillim with joy, davening with gladness, doing favors for one another with relish. Their Avos Yisrael, their love of fellow Jew, made them into one big family. True, their respect for the Torah scholar was somewhat lacking. They were quite capable of addressing a Torah scholar by name without adding the title Moreinu, our master, and they might even address him using the familiar pronoun du, that means you rather than ear. But nonetheless, they were truly dear Jews. When the Jews in the Kavronim Beis HaMedrash finished their tilim, they got ready to daven. The Mordechai also put on his tilim, following the Rebbe's routine of preparation for davening. And that was, after getting up from sleep and reciting Tikkun Chatzos, one cannot proceed directly to daven. First, one must go to the mikveh and attend to other preliminaries. Before beginning these preparations for davening, Rebbe Mordechai put on tefillin and recited the Shema. He then waited until after the sunrise minion had completed their prayers and heard Baruch Hu, Chazoras Hashatz, the repetition of the Amida, and the Kadeshim that were recited by that minion, and only then did he go to the nearby stream for the pre-davening mikveh, for immersing himself before davening, after which he began to daven. When Rav Mordechai davened, he would become so deeply engrossed in the words of tefillin, the words of prayer, that he neither saw nor heard what was happening around him. He davened silently, without shouting, but from time to time he would recite entire psukim and passages in a melodious, lively, and joyful voice. Even an ordinary weekday davening of Rav Mordechai could last as long as 5 or 6 hours. A Shabbos davening might last even longer. It all depended upon the quality of Rav Mordechai's hachonis, his preparations before davening. The preparation for Rav Mordechai's davening took a rather long time. In the old days, when he was still not yet a chassid, Rav Mordechai would attempt to arouse within himself fear of the Holy One's majesty and the awareness that it was the Holy One himself before whom he was about to pray. For this purpose, he would approach the chazan's lectern and read to himself the words written there in large, ornate lettering, Dalf, name me, Ata Oimid, know before whom you are standing. He would then shut his eyes and picture in his mind the image of an immense beast such as a buffalo, a gigantic and ferocious species of wild ox. He had mused that if he were to meet such a beast in the street, surely he would be possessed by extreme terror and fright, and that no other thoughts could possibly enter his mind, and his one and only thought would be about how to escape from the buffalo. And after all, this buffalo was no more than one of the beings created by the Holy One. And God had created thousands and millions of buffaloes, and similarly thousands and millions of other fearfully large beasts. So just imagine what fear one must have of the Holy One himself. He who created all these millions upon millions of fearful beasts, how fearful he must be. And how, while davening, one should be unable to think of anyone else and anything else, and should stand in fear and in dread before God. After thoroughly pondering this image in his mind, he would go away from the lectern, from the Omid, and return to his regular place to daven. All this, of course, had occurred very long ago, while he was still a young man, and before he began studying Kabbalah. Once he became familiar with Kabbalah, with Jewish mysticism, his preparations for davening took on a different form. After he had studied Kabbalah for several years, he felt that he was already now on a very lofty spiritual level. And as such, before davening, he would review the names of the malachim, of the angels, in his mind. And Mordechai composed several poems and hymns containing names of angels, and the central theme of these poems and hymns was that the angels should be so kind and disregard their own dignity, and kindly take the trouble to go and inform the Holy One that Rav Mordechai was about to pray to him, so God should be so kind as to stop paying attention to other things and pay attention to Rav Mordechai's davening. And this was his preparation for tefillah once he became a mekubal, after he thought himself as a Kabbalist. However, after he arrived at the Baal Shem Tov's court, Rav Mordechai became a completely different person in a matter of days. Now, having been privileged to witness the Rebbe's true derech of avodas Hashem, the true path of divine service, his preparations for davening was very different. And yet, sometimes the davening didn't go so smoothly even after the proper preparations. And more than once, that Mordechai complained to the Baal Shem Tov that the avodas hatfila, that the service of davening, was exceedingly difficult for him, and he begged the Rebbe for a bracha, that the Rebbe bless him, that his tefillah might come without such great difficulty. And the Holy Baal Shem Tov replied to Rav Mordechai that what he needed was more chadisha, that he needed to till the earth more. That means he should work more on his own character, and only then would the zariya, would the planting, yield a good harvest in tefillah, in prayer. Once Rav Mordechai heard a discourse from the Baal Shem Tov about the significance of tefillah that had a marked impression upon him, and when he heard it, he repeated it once again and once again, time after time, by heart, and he would repeat it in the same tone of voice that he had heard it from the Baal Shem Tov. And each repetition of this particular teaching, which spoke about the significance of tefillah, brought within Rav Mordechai a willingness and a desire to engage in avodas tefillah, in the service of prayer. So it was on the present occasion as well that Rav Mordechai thought about this Torah of the Baal Shem Tov, which is mentioned at length in the letter, which, as I said previously, is to be found in the book in English, The Making of Hasidim, as well as in Hebrew and in the Yiddish translation. And if anybody wants to see it, it's well worth seeing it in the original. However, because of its length, we'll not tell it as part of the story. And now, too, Reb Mordechai thought about this particular Torah. And after Reb Mordechai returned from the mikveh, where he had toiled himself from the stream, where he had immersed himself, he began his preparations for davening. He repeated the Rebbe's teaching several times and meditated deeply about it. Then he commenced his davening. At about 10 o'clock in the morning, the city dignitaries began to assemble in the Kavronim Shul for a meeting of the Chevra Kadisha, the Holy Society, which is the term used for the burial society. A prominent and wealthy citizen of the town had just died, and they had to decide what plot this man was to be buried in, the price that they were to charge for the grave, and on what civic improvements the money which was given for the funeral and the gravesite should be spent. The meeting lasted for several hours, and as was the custom in such meetings, there was much shouting and screaming. However, Reb Mordechai remained seated in the southwestern corner of the shul, completely oblivious to all that was happening around him. One of the men attending the meeting happened to notice the stranger sitting in talis and tefillin, his eyes open, his face flushed, muttering a few words from time to time. His words were whispered, and it was difficult to make out exactly what he was saying. Right in the middle of davening, or whatever he was saying, he would break into some kind of song with an unfamiliar melody. The one who first noticed it told several others, and soon all the men were staring at Reb Mordechai, wondering who the stranger might be and what he might be doing right now. Just then, a few of the assistant gravediggers came to ask the gabbai where they should dig the grave for the deceased. One of the gravediggers had been present the previous day between Mincha and Ma'ariv when Reb Mordechai had related that in Volhynia, Podolia, there lived a great Gaon and Tzaddik, a miracle worker known throughout the region as the Baal Shem Tov. The assembled council members listened to the gravedigger's report with open mouths as they remained sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, gazing at this stranger, the unknown Jew who had just recently come to town. How strange it was to them. At 12 o'clock noon, a Jew sits in talis and tefillin, apparently still davening. Hours passed, and these Jews still had not had their fill of watching the strange Jew daven. At last, they heard the sounds of the funeral procession, and they left to join it. As they went along, they told the story of the unknown Jew who was sitting in the Kavronim Shul and davening. The listeners were skeptical. They couldn't believe that somebody was davening so late into the afternoon. So when they returned from the cemetery, and Reb Mordechai by then was up to Kriya Shema, a large crowd gathered to watch him daven. When Reb Mordechai finished davening, he removed a piece of bread from his bag, washed his hands, and ate the bread with some water. After this meal, he lay down on a bench to rest. In our next installment, Emir Tzashem will tell how Reb Mordechai finally meets up with Reb Chaim the Porush and what their conversation is, and how Reb Mordechai remains in that town for a while, and the position that he assumes for a short time, as we will be telling Emir Tzashem in the next installment.